Thank you, Jared. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and on behalf of Les, Dr. Anderson wanted me to express, his, I guess, he really wanted to be here and wanted to be visiting with you. Really good reason that he's not here tonight, but it's been natural, I guess, that I'm here, that I could present these data for Les and these concepts for Dr. Anderson. Mostly because, part of the reason is I went to graduate school under Dr. Anderson. More specific reason for that is that we worked together quite a bit. Myself as a beef cattle specialist for the University of Tennessee, Les at the University of Kentucky. It's natural that us being in similar production scenarios and the states are very similar with regard to production types, that we would work together. As a matter of fact, some of the projects that I'll talk about here that Les is doing, have plans to transition also and expand into Tennessee. Now, another thing that really makes a good transition from what Dr. Patterson talked about into this, there's several different reasons. One is we all have a University of Kentucky connection. Dr. Patterson mentioned that he worked there as a beef cattle specialist for quite a while. I studied there, and Les is working there currently. But the other fact is I think that we share a very similar extension philosophy. So I've known this about the three of us and the way we approach things mechanically is maybe a little different, but I do see that every day we get up, we think about how can we improve the lives and the livelihood of the beef cattle producers that we work for in our respective states. One thing that comes from that is maybe a little different than you might have seen in years past on taking a technology and trying to implement it, more so that when the market takes a technology in a direction that the producers that we serve need that information, need to be able to see it in a demonstration type, then we're ready there to do that for them. I think you see that in Missouri with what Dr. Patterson just mentioned with the Show Me Select, and he went through that really well, and I think those philosophies mesh really well, and that really plays in, plus the transition that they just made with the last couple of questions that Dr. Patterson had on some of the difficulty of tracking data into the mature cow herd and keeping up with those, and that's some of the things that Les has tried to approach here with the series of really projects, I guess we'll call them, to try to implement those into mature cow herds and be able to track them over a lot of years. So just starting out, we know that artificial insemination is underutilized countrywide for the technology that it is and the value that it represents, but more so underutilized, I think, in some of the areas, especially that Les and I serve, than it would be. And this is very logical that it would break out this way. These are NOMS data from 2007-2008 on the percentage of producers that use or operations that use estrus synchronization and artificial insemination. And you see that as you get over into our neck of the woods that it's fairly lowly implemented in the beef cattle herds. Part of the reason for that, and again, to track these NOMS data would be, I guess, the biggest drawback or the biggest roadblock that producers would have to this would be the labor and time that it's involved with. That plays into something that Dr. Patterson also mentioned about the percentage of herds that are a primary source of income, especially where we deal with in the Southeast. Traditionally, they aren't a significant, they are a significant source of income, but not a primary source of income. So devoting extra time and labor to that doesn't seem to be something that a lot of the folks that we work with want to do. Cost tends to be at the high end of the list, and that's something I want to talk a little bit about, a hurdle to overcome. So again, just to back up and mention something that I said starting out here, I think I said it, and want to readdress that again, that as we think through these processes and try to figure out how us as extension specialists can help expand the utilization of estrus synchronization, artificial insemination, you as the producers in the room can think about it from the direction of the economic impact that it could have on your mature cow herd and certainly through your heifers as well. But those of you in the industry being here for the NAAB meeting, certainly I think that if we all work together, we'll see the expansion of the implementation of these, and if we can overcome these hurdles that we know exist and that we can break out very specifically through these data, then I think we can get a lot further down the road to more implementation of doing this. So What we're going to talk about here as we wrap up, and again, I'll be conscious of your time. Maybe if we could just bring the party from next door over here, this would all go a little smoother. But what we do want to try to cover is the cost of, talking about the cost of pregnancy. That if you look at the NOMS data that we just mentioned, that 17% being reluctant to implement AI, artificial insemination, and estrus synchronization because of the cost, then we need to think through that process. Is there really a cost difference? We'll talk about the short-term economics of estrus synchronization and AI, and we know that pretty well. That's pretty well established. But again, to feed right off of the questions that came from Dr. Patterson's presentation, the long-term effects, economic effects of estrus synchronization and AI, trying to get a characterization of that and being able to demonstrate that to other folks and see what we can do and realize that down the road. And then just doing all that through real-world examples and showing the impact, kind of a classic extension demonstration. I'll also say that kind of going back to the philosophical approach to the way we do our jobs, we also, at least in Kentucky and Tennessee, enjoy a little bit of a benefit that only a handful of states still have intact, and that's that we have a very classic county-based extension service. So the data that you'll see later on in this presentation, mostly facilitated by a few coordinators of the programs, but also mostly through the county extension agents, and we enjoy that in Tennessee. So if you're an administrator or somebody that's looking for an angle to really talk about the positive impacts of the extension service in your state, this would be a good way to do it, show the efficacy when it's used correctly of how you can help implement this and use that conduit, as was previously mentioned. So let's talk about that cost of pregnancy, the cost being a roadblock to implementation of estrus synchronization, artificial insemination, maybe even as much so, I think, as the time and the labor, if the time, part of that time and labor component, having an economic component wrapped up in it as well. So we think that bull pregnancies are free, right? We turn a bull out there and he generates some pregnancies for us, and we don't really associate that much cost in those individual pregnancies, other than we know we have to buy a few bulls at a certain cost. Well, Sandy Johnson, back several years ago now, really did a good job of detailing out what it takes to maintain a bull based on its purchase price over a year, taking into account the salvage value of that bull, all those sunk costs and variables that have an impact on the cost of pregnancy. And you take that a little further, and she did, again, a very nice job of here on this graph showing that the increasing cost of a bull, and this could probably be taken out a little further now with the market that we're in these days, and how much those pregnancies cost per pregnancy based on pregnancy rate. So if you get down into that 85% pregnancy rate in a defined breeding season with a $5,000 bull, which is very typically seen now, at least in our neck of the woods, then you're looking at a per pregnancy cost of somewhere between $60 to $70. If you get into the 90% at the $5,000 range on 30 to 35 cows, and that's the other important component here, you know, thinking about these as mature bulls, maybe not being able to have that many pregnancies out of them now that we're buying a lot younger bulls these days. But again, as they get to that mature level on a $5,000 bull, 90% pregnancy rate on 30 or 35 cows, you're looking somewhere between $65 and $75 per pregnancy. So just to initiate the discussion by saying that when we think about one of the hurdles to artificial insemination being the cost, I think the place to start to combat that as really a roadblock is going to be to fully flesh out what it costs to get a bull pregnancy. So again, the cost of pregnancy varies very dramatically, even with natural service breeding systems, and can change very dramatically as we get into a lower calving percentage. And the cost of pregnancy, I think, and I'm very comfortable making this statement. Some may be a little less comfortable, but I really feel like that if you buy the kind of bull that we know makes good calves for natural service, that the cost of pregnancy for AI and the cost per pregnancy for those natural service sires gets pretty close to being the same. Okay, so especially now when you think about getting into multi-sire units, which a lot of the folks probably here at these meetings would deal with, and you change the amount of bull power that's needed, and that's really where you get into to a discussion of the value of extra standardization and AI relative to whole systems, a whole systems approach, and the total cost of reproductive management for individual herds or individual producer scenarios. So again, you'll get, when you say this at a meeting, that you think that the natural service pregnancy cost approaches that of artificial insemination pregnancy costs, you see a lot of shaking heads, and there's no way that could happen. But if you actually look at the data and go through it, that at least you can be comfortable saying that there's not as much disparity as you would think there is when you ascribe the real value to those natural service pregnancies. So let's take two approaches here, looking at the profitability or the impact of artificial insemination on the profitability of cowherds. And let's look at that short-term impact and then transition to that more difficult to assess long-term impact. So first, to look at the short-term impact, I don't think there's a much better way than to go through some data that Cliff Lamb has talked about. A lot of you, if you've been to some meetings where Cliff has had a discussion about the positive impacts of extra standardization and AI. You will have seen him talk about the cow herd there that he worked with in Mariana when he was at the University of Florida, and changing the calving distribution of those and adding value in that way. This is a different discussion, but a set of eight herds of about 1,200 cows that they put together in actually a controlled situation with somewhat of a control group. So part of those cattle being fixed-time AI with a cleanup bull behind that single fixed-time AI service, and those being nearly 600 cows, and natural service without the fixed-time AI of a little more than 600 cows. Bulls, working with eight different farms, you'll get this, but a variation of how long the bull was in after the timed AI, but around a 60-day breeding season past the AI, so a bit longer than 60 total. So when you look at this as in a partial budget, and this is a good way, not really economics as much as it is accounting, but looking at a partial budget to try to evaluate the economic impact of incorporating a new technology into your management scheme, then you have to, on the left side, think about the increased returns and the decreased cost, the positive attributes of it, and then the decreased cost and decreased returns and the increased cost is attributing some somewhat negatives to that. And if you go through all those and account for everything, and you look at the data that Cliff and his group generated, and compare those fit the herds that received fixed-time AI, then a cleanup bull versus just a natural service bull, as you see that the weaning rate, the weaning percentage was increased. The days to calving, and this is a very significant thing, and again, just following up on something that Dr. Patterson mentioned, of it's not just a pregnancy, it's also about when that pregnancy is created in that breeding season. So when you shorten those days to calving each year, and you can really tighten that up, it has a huge impact on the overall profitability of a calf crop, and they saw that by incorporation of fixed-time AI. Pounds of calf weaned per cow exposed. Again, this is a number that most of us would be familiar with and use for an overall evaluation of our reproductive management. And you see that increases mostly as a result of the weaning percentage, but also significantly, a significant component of that would be the improved genetics that are accessible through artificial insemination. All that culminating in an increased profit of nearly $50 per cow over those entire herds. So a substantial increase in value of those calves, and on a, you know, even doesn't take more than just an average herd for that to figure up to being a fairly significant economic impact. So now let's transition to look at this long-term impact of EstroSync and AI on the profitability of a cow herd. And again, we know that we can have a very significant effect, as we just showed and as most of you have seen with folks that just start out with their first year using sync and AI. But we also know that incorporating those better genetics on the maternal side over multiple generations is going to be one of our greatest benefits over time, along with the concentration of the calving season. But it really takes several years, and by Les's estimate here, 5 years, to see the actual impact of those maternal genetics start to show up at a sizable rate when you've had time to replace some of your cows with some AI-sired heifers, either purchased or created there on your place. But what we're talking about here, created on your place, retained heifers, and increasing the overall maternal genetics of that herd. Data difficult to collect. We've already mentioned that. Again, just a perfect transition into this discussion from the last. But the way that Les and his team try to approach it, and I should say, too, that Ben Kreitz is here, one of Les's graduate students that helped coordinate a lot of these this data collection and put these data together and analyze those. So they decided that they would do some field studies designed to evaluate the effect of EstroSync and AI on actual cow productivity over about 10 years. Now, we'll caution you that this is not a controlled, it's not empirical or scientific approach necessarily to evaluating this impact over a 10-year period, but it is, as we would use quite often, a demonstration, a case study, if you want to look at it that way, as we would see in other disciplines, a good way to at least look at this and try to get some indication of the long-term effect of incorporation of artificial insemination. They took two farms. One was a large farm and one was an average farm. Large farm started out with 140 cows, and you'll see that as he increased and improved his overall efficiency of that herd, not just reproductive efficiency, but actual resource usage efficiency, that he was able to steadily increase the number of cows he could run on the same land base. So that large herd averaging over this 10-year project from 140 to actually now this year, they were telling me 200 cows. And an average herd of 25 cows as something that we would more often see in the Mid-South and the average herd size that we deal with. So the reproductive plan for those two herds, maternally oriented genetics that fit the environment, that would make best use of the labor and nutrient supply that those producers had available to them, but also at the same time and things that you can get mostly only through artificial insemination, but trying to maintain maternal-oriented genetics, but also increase your marketing ability through the phenotype of the calves, but also through the grouping of the calves as well. Crossbreeding to maintain that. On the smaller herd, of course, it's difficult when they're retaining their own heifers to not have some dilution of that. But in the larger herd, I think they've been able to do some crossover and be able to maintain a higher percentage heterosis in that larger herd. And that was, as they started out, part of the reproductive plan. So to also incorporate the fixed-timed AI with natural service to affect all these things that were part of the plan there. The overall goal, again, going back to that number that I think is probably the best approach that we can have to evaluate our overall reproductive performance, but their goal here was to increase the pounds of calf weaned per cow exposed. When they started out, they knew that, especially in the larger herd, the 140 to 180 head herd, that the mature weight of the cows was getting out of hand without having a positive impact on the weaning, the average weaning weight of the calves. If you paid attention to some of the efficiency kind of talks and read that in the popular press, I think that goes right along with that kind of mature size may be getting beyond what it needs to be to and not justified by a linear correlated increase in the pounds of calf weaned per unit increase in body weight of those mature cows. So they certainly saw that in these herds. Calving season was long. Calving seasons were but long for both of these, more than 120 days, and so overall efficiency low. So let's just look here now at some graphical depiction of the data that they've collected over this 10-year period on these two herds. And we'll start here with the large farm, and what Les has graphed out here is on the left axis, the average cow weight represented by the blue line, and then on the right axis, represented by the orange line, the adjusted weaning weight of those calves. Now, understand this is adjusted weaning weight for 205 days of age, but not adjusted for necessarily cow age, but adjusted to 205 a day. And what they saw here over this period of time was really, I guess, what part of the objective would be to see a decrease in the amount of cow that they were feeding, basically, in that overall herd. Over time, over those years, the mature weight of the cow fell, and something that you can do with artificial insemination and looking for maternal genetics, but still get those that would wean a heavier calf and you know, kind of get those curve benders, as you would think. And so they were effective in doing that, starting out with nearly 1,600-pound cows, and over 9 years bringing that down to about a 1,350-pound cow. But at the same time, increasing the overall adjusted weaning weight up near 600 pounds from an average before that of nearly just right at 500 pounds, of 450 to 500 pounds. So over 9 years of incorporating fixed-timed AI and then keeping those heifers back from that and getting the maternal advantage in the cow herd, some through crossbreeding, but mostly through the improved access to improved genetics, did see what we would hope you would see in, so, you know, the modeling and the best predictions we'd had up to this point. And if you look at that, again, as expressed here in orange as a percent body weight weaned per cow exposed, and I will caution you to realize that this is not percent weaned per cow. It's not a percent of each cow's body weight that they weaned on average, but it's percent body weight weaned per cow exposed. So an extension of that pounds weaned per cow exposed. So it takes into account the open cows as well, their weight and the percentage. So that's why you don't see maybe, you know, getting close to 50% like most folks would shoot for. And in the blue line, representing the pounds weaned per cow exposed. And if you look at this over the 9 year period and realizing that year one there, you had a really dramatic increase in both of those categories, both of those variables. And you would, again, that's what we would like to talk about quite a bit when we're trying to show folks the benefits of estrus synchronization and AI. You get a big benefit in the first year. But if you look at that second year, that actually is whenever he kept a bunch of heifers in this larger herd. I think they mentioned that he kept back 40 heifers, AI-sired heifers. So when you have those then and don't adjust for the age of the cow, then you would see that decrease in that second year. But then steadily improving both the percent weaned per cow, percent body weight weaned per cow exposed, and the pounds weaned per cow exposed simultaneously by the incorporation of, and over a long-term period of time, by the incorporation of fixed-timed AI and the estrus synchronization that goes along with that. So on the average herd, look at the data those from what would be a smaller herd to maybe a lot of you, but an average herd size that we deal with, usually we're looking at a one bull unit between 25 and 35 cows. And you see a similar thing. Again, the cow weight in this more dramatically, probably more pounds of cow than that producer needed to be maintaining. And you see that they were able to decrease that over the 10-year period. And then the orange line represented on the right side of the graph, the adjusted weaning weight increasing over that period of time, and kind of maybe even getting out there as they keep maintaining this project for more years and this case study and looking at those two herds, maybe reaching their biological kind of plateau on those, but doing that within 9 years. I guess you wouldn't expect that you could keep chasing that into infinity, but as you put the benefits of efficiency, feeding less cow, less pounds of total cow, but weaning more calf, pounds of calf, then that's really where it all comes together for, I think, for the economic advantage. So again, here's the percent body weight weaned per cow exposed and the weaning weight per cow exposed in orange and blue respectively. And you see something very similar to what they saw in the large herd. So again, putting these two together to show that you can have these type of effects over a long period of time by the annual incorporation of fixed time day AI followed by natural service and continue to improve even in a small scenario or an average size scenario and large, and you can take it up beyond the 150 to 200 kind of mark that they took it to. So in summary of that, EstraSync and AI is certainly a profitable enterprise for both short-term and long-term. Again, it's very difficult, as we've already mentioned, to collect those types of data. But the best we can do at this point, or not the best we can do, but the data that we do have at this point to evaluate that over at least this 10-year period shows us that we can continue that effect up to the capacity of the land and the cows. And the returns can be greatly increased if they take advantage of the value of their product. So identify what the producer is looking for and breed to hit that target, and we know that we can access genetics that can get us to those goals quicker by incorporation of artificial insemination. But I think it's very important to kind of step back and look at it. You'll probably have the opportunity to hear about this in the next couple of days, but the physiological effects of decreasing the postpartum interval and looking at the distribution of calving. And we have some data here beyond this. I'm not going to go through all that just in the interest of time, but you put all that together, and we certainly see that in the short term we can make big improvements in the profitability of a herd, but really the sweet spot, I think, that comes from maintaining that over time and being able to keep those genetics, those advanced genetics, into our cow herd through what we can access through retained or, in some cases, also definitely through purchased heifers. So I'll go ahead and stop there. There's some more data to discuss here and some individual case studies on a farm program that they're working on at the University of Kentucky through UK Extension and incorporating several hundred producers across the state, many thousands of cows to evaluate this long-term, more on the effect of EstraSync and AI, like I just mentioned, on concentrating the calving season and all the benefits that come along with that. And I think we've seen more discussion of that, it almost being as much value as the genetics we get from it over the last few years. So let me go ahead and stop there and see if there are any questions about these data or any further discussion anybody would like to bring up.